Are you going to hit the record button or not? Like, just waiting for the record button. I'm waiting to hear that sound. It says recording in progress. I didn't hear recording in progress. So how do I know if anything's recording or not? Huh? Hello? Is that Victor? Is Victor there? Oh, see, I got you, Bolger. I knew it was recording the whole time. I really did. I had you going. How'd you going? Man, you're so gullible sometimes. But waiting on Victor Vardanado. Vardanado. See, I got to see. Victor Vard, because you can't have a D and N together. You have to have the V-A-R-D. Vardanado. Victor Vardanado. See, I could get it. Just got to give me a little bit of time to be able to work it out. Victor Vardano. Vardano. All right, cool. All right, I got it now. But Victor's got a pretty interesting story. I want to talk to him about some stuff. I don't even know. Like, he might even, like, think that it's weird that I'm going to ask him about the hometown he grew up in. Gary, Indiana. Not a lot of you guys know, Gary, Indiana, for the longest time, was the murder capital of the world. It was the murder capital of the world. I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. But Victor is blind. He is African-American, but he is also, like, what you would call albino. There's so many interesting things I want to talk about, but I also want to talk about growing up in Gary, Indiana. How did that affect your stand-up comedy? Because I'm sure it did have some type of effect on it. So coming up here in just a minute, it is Victor Vardanado. See, now I'm already messing it up now because I'm overthinking it. Vardanado. Victor Vardanado. Vardanado. I know that I probably sound like a 62 trying to spell this out, but I just want to have the name right. But Victor, he grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, and moved to Minneapolis. Man, that's a pretty big jump there. He's a little bit older guy. Born in 1969. He's 2 years older than me. Just turned 40 myself. He just turned 50. Anybody, if you're in your two range, yeah, you can always just say that you just turned a certain age, in my opinion. But hopefully Victor does show up. I did a big setup for an interview yesterday. The guest pretty much no-called, no-showed. I told my producer, Vulture, to basically tell this bitch to, like, pound sand. And I'm not saying to just call her a bitch because she's a woman or whatever. No, I'm just saying. I show prep. And a lot of these people, look, I don't want anybody to say that I got a big head or I have a big ego or anything. But if I'm just being honest, I can pretty much interview anybody and make them sound interesting. I really can. But that's also me not saying that the guests that I have on aren't interesting. Because I do think they are interesting. And I think Victor has a very interesting story. And that's why I want to have him on. But even, you know, I mean, he could have an interesting story. But at the same time, he could also just be a bad interview. And I'm not saying that's going to be the case. But even if it's a great, if you give me a little bit of meat on the bone, I will give you filet mignon. I will. I'm like a master chef. I'm an iron chef. But just waiting for Victor to log on here. Like I said, rules still apply. Whenever I get ready for an interview, I'm always on 5 minutes before. If you're on at the time of the interview, if you log on at the time of the interview, you're late. I know that I sound like a broken record when I say that, but it is the truth. You can't just decide to call in right at the time you're supposed to be interviewed and expect that it's not going to be a little uncomfortable at all. So just waiting for Victor here. Got it. Ah, Victor. Waiting for Victor. Hey, Victor, how are you, buddy? Just waiting for the microphone to be unmuted there. Victor, just waiting on Victor. And listen, I'm in no hurry, Victor. I will stretch a little bit of time. But
how's this?
Oh, Victor, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Doing wonderful, man. No, I was already talking a little bit. I'd like to get on a little bit before I do the interviews and kind of preview what's coming up. But Victor, is it Victor Varnado?
Victor Varnado, that's great.
Okay, see, I always start at the beginning. I try to get the pronunciation right. But here, hold on one second, though. Hold on. Did you know, like, Varnado? All right, see, I was overthinking it. You ever look at a word and then they all look, it looks a little jumbled up? Well, I shouldn't say that to you because that's a little insensitive. I'm sorry, Victor. I shouldn't say, have you looked at a word? But, I mean, do you read Braille, Victor?
No, actually, I see. Yes, I am legally blind, but I do have reading glasses.
You can see. Okay, all right, see.
I'm legally blind. I'm not totally blind.
Victor, I'm sorry, Victor. Okay, see, when they say
blind.
What
you should be sorry about is your research.
Well, I know. I love it. I love it. See, I love when a guest can come on and bust my balls and call me out on it whenever I'm not on top of my game. But it does say on your Wikipedia, blind. And I guess when I saw legally blind, I was thinking about the Legally Blonde movies. And I was like, well, she's blonde. So I guess he's legally blind or whatever. But no, Victor, man, a very interesting story. Before we get into everything, tell my audience a little bit about yourself, your story, and where people can check out any of your content.
Well, my name is Victor Varnado. I am a great guy. A lot of people think I'm okay. My wife especially, and my mom. I am a comedian and a producer and a filmmaker, and I make all kinds of interesting things. I think one of the two most famous things I think I've ever made in my life were, one, I did a New Yorker cartoon that kind of blew up in 2020 and was like one of the most shared New Yorker cartoons of
2020. Is it one of the political cartoons where,
yes,
like you gotta look at it a little bit? And you got to kind of, you know, have a little common sense to figure out, like, the true meaning of it.
It was kind of straightforward. I did a cartoon the day after George Floyd was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And the cartoon was two people on a mountainside, and they were standing on there was a sign on the mountain that said "Understanding Racism in America," and then a sign pointing up the mountain that said "Doing Something About It."
Oh, okay.
Pretty simple.
No, I mean, I like it. Now let me ask you though. I support your vision and everything on that, but as polarized as the country is, did you get any blowback from, you know, some of the people that aren't as understanding as people like me and you that
absolutely
did not support your message?
Absolutely. I get blowback. It's really strange. Some people get blowback on, some of the material that I make is socially reactive. Like a lot of the cartoons I make are reacting to society in one way or another, whether it's in a funny way or it's in reacting to something that is, you know, maybe sad that happened. But no matter what the message is, if you're on a wide enough scale, someone is mad about it. Like I've even once put up a post that said racism stinks. That was it. And people were still like, because they felt like I was aiming it at them or something, and they got offended. But no matter what you post, people will, on a wide audience, somebody will be upset.
But Victor, the way that I feel about it sometimes is if I do a show and somebody, I don't get a complaint email or somebody that's upset with the view that I had, I don't think I was doing my job. Is that kind of how you take your political satire and the cartoons and stuff that you do? Like if you don't get a little bit of a blowback, like you're like, oh man, I must have not have did my job.
No, I mean, I do. I actually am striving for the exact opposite, but I know what you're saying. This is what I hear from what you're saying. What I'm hearing is you're saying that you're trying to talk about issues that matter. And so you can't talk about issues that matter without getting blowback. That's just not happening.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But then you can also, you being a comedian, you could be doing a parody about something you don't even believe in. You see what I'm saying? Just to prove a point from the other side. You see what I'm saying? Like you could take a way out there, like, opinion that's not the popular one, and you might not even believe it, but you're doing it as a satire and a parody to make people open up their eyes of, like, yeah, there's people out there just like that.
Yeah, I think the only thing about satire and parody, I mean, I do satire and parody all the time, but I have my view on it is it's my job that people understand that it's satire and parody. Like, I'm trying to communicate with people. So that's my job. And so if people don't understand what I'm trying to say, then if people don't understand what I'm trying to say, and then are, because that's part of some of the blowback you get. Some of the blowback you get is people not understanding, you know, like whatever stupid message you're trying to say. Like, if I'm like, hey, everybody, Dookie's brown, you get me? And some people are like, not my Dookie, you know, and that's not the message that I'm trying to say. So that's my fault. That's on me. Well, that's on me with the Dookie Brown message.
Now, Victor, I actually did this one stunt where I had to go up to Gary, Indiana, and I see you're from Gary, Indiana.
I was born there.
Now, was it a bad place? Was it considered the murder capital of the United States when you grew up there, or was it a nice area?
Absolutely. Yes, it was. And in fact, my tricycle used to get stolen every day.
So it really is that bad in Gary, Indiana. Why though? What I suspect that it was a good place at one time, right?
I'm sure, like, when they broke ground there, they were like, Gary, Indiana, one day this will be a special town. I can't wait.
Yeah. Come see the World Fair at Gary, Indiana.
I'm going to start a new town named after my son, Gary. This will be great.
Yeah, see? Come down to Gary, Indiana. Yeah. Yeah. So I could actually see that. But what, I mean, was it really that bad, though?
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
Like, give me an idea. Like, I mean, now, a lot of people don't know this, but Victor, I don't want to be offensive, but you have what do you call albino, like your skin pigment and stuff that it's you
called,
have?
It's called albinism. Most yes. people. Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to refer to it. Like some people.
And I'm trying to be. I'm sure I sound like a complete idiot, but I also want to be sensitive. I don't want to be offending or anything.
No, you don't
like
sound
that.
Like an idiot. You don't sound like an idiot at all. You sound like a person who hasn't met somebody who has albinism before. That's not a big deal.
Yeah. No. Fine. Now explain to my audience a little bit about it. Like, because there's got to be some difficulties growing up with albinism.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so just a quick explanation. Albinism is when someone doesn't have the same pigment as other people, and much less, in fact. And my parents are both black, but I came out with light skin, blonde hair. Hazel eyes.
Freckles at all
Huge
or no?
Huge penis.
Oh, well, at least you, I mean, that worked out.
Hell yeah. Line up.
Yeah, but like, now, how was that growing up though? Like, you have African-American parents and you are African-American, but you came out with less pigment. Was that had to be tough, right?
Yes, that was tough. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't actually know the difference when I was younger. Obviously, when I was like, I think it was not until I was like 4 or 5, I remember putting my grandfather's hat on my head. And then I was confused as to why I didn't look exactly like my grandfather. And I think that was when I first knew that something was different about me. I think I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Was it how you were as a person, or was it just looking in the mirror and seeing that your skin wasn't the same as theirs?
What do you mean by how you were as a person? I'm confused.
Well, I mean, like culturally is what I'm saying, or just being a part, you know, like culturally white people are a little bit differently because you know, stuff, Spanish, Asian, culturally they're, differently. Did you feel differently in that way, or was it just of how you looked at yourself when you looked in the mirror?
I mean, there's I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot to it. Some of the writing that I'm working on right now is actually around just this whole subject, because there's so much to it. Because, for instance, on one hand, you have the fact that, like, when I'm growing up, people don't see dark skin, so they don't treat me the same way as they might treat, like, my brother, for instance, who has very dark skin. Number two, I can just go back and forth. Like, I could pass for white anytime that I wanted to, just about. Unless people were very familiar with genetics, then I could basically stroll into anywhere and basically pass for white. And so my whole life, being connected to my culture, was difficult sometimes because I didn't experience the world in the same way as other Black people did. But that also reinforced just generally the idea about what racism is, because I didn't experience the world in the same way as people, as my brother, and because his skin was darker and mine was lighter, then that basically says straight up, the world is pretty messed up.
No, it is. I mean that is a perfect, like, just, you know, standing as an outsider looking in, you're absolutely correct that
we had the same economic system, the same economic start. We had the same family, lived in the same neighborhood. We had the same,
but it was
type
all
of
down
education.
To skin color. It was all down to skin
it was
color.
Absolutely skin color.
Wow, that is crazy, man. Like, I mean,
my brother,
go ahead.
My brother definitely has been wrestled down by the policeman and caused to, like, scream in pain because they're tightening cuffs on him. Because, you know, like, he's been arrested roughly. I've never been arrested.
And
to the point where I don't even fear it anymore.
Wow. That's got to be a crazy, like, living in both. Like, it's almost being like a daywalker vampire almost, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, you could walk amongst the whiteys that can be out in the sun and stuff. You see what I'm saying? I know it's a big ass stretch, but
I used to tell a joke, which is exactly that, where I used to talk about, I used to go, like, I am a Black albino, ladies. You know what I'm talking about? All the benefits of being Black without the disappointed looks from your parents. That's a funny joke, but it basically is just saying, hey, you know, people are racist. You know that if you bring somebody home with dark skin, that a lot of parents would be pretty upset. It's a joke where it's one of those things where, just like we were talking about earlier, where, like, I want to talk about a subject that means something to me, but I have to do it in such a way that people can understand me. Like, you understand the point I'm trying to make. And I think that's a good example where like, people laugh. But when you think about that joke, there's
it's
a lot
sad,
to it.
Though. It's kind of it sad,
is.
Though.
It's very sad.
If you don't laugh, you're going to be so depressed that, you know, you gotta almost laugh at it. But now, all right. So you were born in 69. You're 10 years older than me. All right. So what has your dating life been like? Like, what have you, like, what has your dating history been? Have you, like, dated more Black women or Caucasian women?
I would say that I've dated every type of person. Here's the thing. One thing that happened to me growing up, when race was really something that I thought about a lot, and just, like, who you are as a person. And because I was given such a real like, test that showed me that the individual that I was inside is not necessarily connected to, like, what people see and perceive. That's the same way I am with women. Like, I've dated women of every different type, and I have friends of every different type. Like, I just go for good people.
I haven't been as diverse as you have, man. See, I always feel like I've left out, you know, especially growing up in the South, like, the way that I have, but at the same time, you know, it's also led me to believe that racism, kids are not born racist. They're taught that. They're taught that through heritage and just generationally. And I think I was very lucky that, you know, I was able to break the cycle, you know, like, it's really, really refreshing to I think you got a great message to deliver to people. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you, because it is, you have a different perspective that a lot of people don't have.
I agree with that too. I think one of the things that I have more than anything, and I'm lucky, is empathy, because
I am too.
I feel that when I talk to people, I always try to consider things from their point of view, even on small things, like when you're asking about albinism, and I want to put you at ease and being like, I get it. You've never talked to somebody who has albinism before. You have a lot of questions. That's totally fine. You know,
doesn't it suck to be empathetic though? I mean, because I've always noticed, like, I get in bad mood sometimes though too, because I take on people's like feelings too much sometimes.
Yeah. I think that I like empathy, because I always like to boil things down to like one statement that helps remind me like what my mission is on different subjects. And for empathy, my mission is, the thing that reminds me to be empathic to other people, I have empathy for other people, is just nobody considers themselves a villain. Like, nobody is waking up in the morning like, I'm the worst person. So like, everybody who's doing something is really most of the time trying to do good from their point of view. And there are extremes, of course. You've got your serial killers and and whatnot. But for the most part, most people are just trying to do things from their point of view, and they're not trying to be a villain. They're just like, this is what I think needs to happen. Or they're trying to pursue acceptance, but they don't know how to get it. So they do it in weird ways. But at the very core of it, there's just like somebody inside who just wants people to like them and wants to be, you know, respected and loved by everybody else. So they're not considering themselves to be the villain.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. Like, I mean, I'm sure that Hitler woke up every morning and was like, oh, I'm definitely a villain, right? Wouldn't you think so?
I bet he didn't even, he was a villain. He is definitely a villain, but I bet he didn't even think of himself that way.
Really?
I bet he didn't.
Yeah, he thought he was doing God's work. He thought he was doing something great.
He thought that he was chosen. He thought that he was answering to some sort of higher calling. He probably didn't think, he probably thought that he had to do terrible things to get good results. He probably didn't think he was a villain. The same way, like someone, like you'll have to punish a child. Like sometimes you have to do things which seem terrible to that child to get good results. That's probably how he thought of himself.
Hey, Victor, I was also, during some of my research, did you had a part in the Pluto Nash movies, correct?
Yes.
Did you really get, did you get a chance to work with Eddie Murphy?
Oh, yeah, daily. That was the weirdest part about that
movie. Holy crap, man. That had to be. All right. So please walk me through the first time you met Eddie Murphy. Like, I got to hear this experience.
The very first time I met Eddie Murphy, and by the way, Pluto Nash was my very first big movie that I was on. So I had never been on a movie that was like, you know, Warner Brothers or something like that before. And so the production is a totally different level. And so when I go in on my very first day of shooting, I don't even know like how important they treat you as an actor on movies. Because basically, here's the thing. If you've got a business,
was it a SAG? It was a SAG gig. Definitely.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Definitely. It was SAG, multi-million dollars. Like, this is hundreds of millions of dollars going into making this movie. So think about that. Like, if you, if anything happens to any of the actors, the whole thing shuts down for a while, okay? And that costs money. So it's so important that the actors are just happy and just like zooming along and making this movie, that it's become a culture where they treat you like really, really like gold. And I did not know that at the time. So when I was walking on the set and there was a fake town and there was like a gumball machine in the fake town. I tried to get gum out of the gumball machine, and yeah. One of the PAs saw me and they were like, you want a gumball? I was like, oh, I don't have any change. And then I walked from there to the tent where the director was sitting. And by the time I'd gotten there in like just a minute, they had gone on the walkie talkies. They had found someone with change and gotten gum out of the gumball machine and then ran it to me. And I was just casually just trying to get gum out. I'd never been on a movie set before like this. As I was just like screwing around with the prop, and my casual mention of gumball caused a whole thing on the walkie-talkies where they ran a gumball to me.
So, but so Eddie, though, the first time you met him, you know, a lot of people. And before we get into that, why did I absolutely love the movie? I thought it was great. But a lot of people like kind of pan it, though. Like they think that it's crap. And I'm like, no, I loved it.
I would say that it is not a great movie. I mean, I saw the movie and I was like, it's not so great. I mean, I had a blast doing the movie. But
it's a cult classic, you would say, right? It's definitely a cult classic.
I think it's getting there. I do think it's getting there to be a cult classic, but there's some, you know, like if you paid full price to go see that movie, you know, there were not a lot of happy faces in the theater at the time.
I did see Spider-Man yesterday.
Oh, okay. I can't wait to see that. I'm excited about that.
Oh, so good. I'm no spoiler. See, I can't. I was going to give a review of the movie last night on my YouTube channel, and I was like, I can't talk about it because everybody knows, you know, certain key parts of the movie. It's like one of the worst kept secrets of all time. Uh-huh. But I mean, everybody got mad because I like mentioned one little thing and I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to talk about it.
Yeah, I would say just give it a little time because people do get mad about spoilers. Like I remember like there was some movie that came out and people were like spoiling it. Was it Sixth Sense that came out and then some people spoiled
it? Oh yeah, Sixth Sense, the one where Bruce Willis was already dead. I'm sorry, it's not a spoiler. That movie came out in 99, so
yeah, it's fine.
You guys can F off if you have a problem with it. But no, so Eddie Murphy though, like, was he cool? A lot of people would think Eddie Murphy would be like, you know, big ego, probably wouldn't be cool. Was he nice?
He was very cool to me. I mean, I kind of went through like a mini test and then that made it, then I was, he was cool to me after that. Basically the test was he sent some of his, well, actually he didn't send them, but they did come, some of his people that he worked with came to see me do stand up. And then when they saw that I was funny, then they reported back that I was funny. Then the next time I saw him, he goes, "Hey, my friends, my crew said you, your stand up's pretty good." So, and I was like, "Thanks."
Did he do the laugh? Did he do the laugh?
No, not at that time.
Oh, okay. But so like when you were growing up though, like Eddie Murphy had to be somebody that you were like, holy crap. Like,
yeah, you're not kidding. Like Eddie Murphy was like, I mean, when I first saw him, it's like seeing Mickey Mouse, but he's like a walking, talking person. So that's what seeing Eddie Murphy, because he's so iconic. He's like beyond human to me at the time. Cause I was like a comedian and you know, everything that I know about comedy at one time was all focused on Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. And comedians like couldn't be cool back in the day. It was like, you all had to be like a, you know, you look like a hobo or kind of downtrodden or like a pimp or whatever. But what? Eddie wore like all leather, like on stage and was like, and his specials and everything. Like he made it look cool though, to be a comedian.
Yeah, he did, but he also has said recently that sometimes he regrets some of his outfits and some of his routines back then. I mean, because he was like, what, you know, early 20s. That's a very different person than somebody who's like, you know, 50 or 60. But yeah, he was really like doing the rock and roll comedy sort of thing.
Yeah, man, that was really cool. Now, did you grow up watching Cosby at all or no? Like, I mean, everybody was talking about Eddie being dirty and Richard Pryor being dirty and stuff, but I don't know. They weren't doing what Cosby was doing.
Cosby was next level dirty.
Yeah, like he was undercover dirty. He's undercover terrible.
Cosby was the worst. I mean, at the time, growing up, I loved Cosby. I mean, amazing, funny guy. Also, I'm a person where I think that to be legitimately funny, you have to be funny without any crutches. And I felt like Cosby was one of those guys where he was just like, he can be funny without swearing or whatever. And I really admired that.
But isn't not swearing kind of a little bit of a crutch, though? I mean, swearing can be a crutch, but then you could be like, hey, come see my comedy show where I don't curse. But not cursing can be a crutch as well, too.
It can be, but I swear a lot in just general life. If you ever meet me on the street, I'll probably tell you a few things.
Will you be like, yo, what up, cracker ass motherfucker? Why you in here? Would that? No. No, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yes. I can say it because I'm a cracker and I'm a Florida cracker as well, too. We kind of wear it as a badge of honor down here. You know where the word cracker comes from, right? It's the Florida cattlemen.
Florida cattlemen?
Yeah. They would be on the they would be on their horses and they would be driving the cattle and they would crack the whips to get the cows to go. And that's why they would call themselves Florida crackers.
Oh, they would call themselves or black people would call them crackers?
No, the white people would call white people would call themselves crackers. They were it's like a term of endearment to call yourself a Florida cracker, born and raised.
I'm just going to take a guess. I haven't researched this, but considering that the way you say that story came was from them cracking a whip and then people used to crack whips on slaves, I'm wondering if maybe there's a little more to it.
I mean, there could be, but at the same time, though, Florida was, you know, kind of stayed out of the whole thing until the very end, close to the Civil War. Florida just wanted to be left alone.
But I'm wondering if maybe like the cracking of the whip that also became the cracking that also, I mean, that cracker referring to the cracking of the whip from black people may have been the cracking of the whip for slave owners.
It very well could be. You know,
I don't know for sure.
My ancestors did a lot of messed up stuff. So like it possibly could be.
I think
it possibly could be.
I used to work for a show, a TV show on the Discovery Channel where I would research history. Like I would research weird history.
Oh,
and
what
I would always
show?
Have to. It was called What History Forgot.
Okay.
And it was.
I love history.
I like history. I like history a lot. I like information. I lose myself in Wikipedia all the time. And it was one of those things where that would be one of those things where I would definitely like research because it sounds right to me. So I would probably look and find out how true it is or how true it isn't. Like the whole crack thing, like cracker thing. Like when you explain it to me, that makes a lot of sense. But then also the way it's used by black people, I'm wondering if it has an expanded meaning.
Oh, trust me, it very well easily could, uh-huh. But the way isn't it about the way that you interpret things though? Like, is the way that your beliefs are set correct? Like, I don't even think about the crack of the whip, but I also understand why people would think that it is related to slavery. But the way that I look at it is because of the Florida cattlemen driving cattle in the state of Florida.
I mean, I get the way you look at it, but I think that possibly, I mean, here's what I think is going to happen after this conversation, because you sound like an intelligent person. And I think what's going to happen after this conversation is we're probably both going to go look it up and see.
Oh,
exactly.
No, we definitely are.
Exactly.
I am.
And then when you have expanded knowledge about it, like if you find out that it definitely means this other thing, then you're probably going to like adjust the way you might use it.
No. How about this? Let's me and you reconvene. And we'll do our own research and actually come to the table and I can see what I found out and you can see what you found out. And look, I'm the type of person, like, you know, a lot of people don't like to admit when they're wrong. Like, my favorite thing in the world is to be told that I am wrong because I like learning new things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, I'm all about that, too. I will absolutely admit when I'm wrong. I have no problem with it at all. And in fact, I don't think that you're wrong in this conversation. I just think that
it could mean more things and I don't want to offend people.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know the answer to it. So we don't know the answer. So you're not wrong. I'm just saying we're just like having a conversation and possibly going to expand what we both know.
I must sound like a real Southern slackjaw piece of crap down in the South United States. I do apologize.
Not at all. You actually sound articulate and you sound like you think about broad ideas, which is a thing
which
that I like.
Which
needs
to be done
people.
More.
Yeah, I think so. I think people need to think about, you know, just what it means. Like, what are you doing? I'm always thinking about this because I'm just like, how do I want to spend my time? Like you are a person whom, like myself, has decided, hey, I don't want to spend my time working 9 to 5 in somebody's office. I don't want to do that. So what am I doing with my time? And then when you start thinking like that, you're second thinking like, okay, what's the purpose? What am I trying to do? Why do things even matter? And then when you start answering those questions, I think that when you become that type of person who just like considers other people and they think about how they're affecting other people by what they say and what they do, that's how you seem to me. You don't seem dumb. At all.
How do you want people to view you?
I can tell you how I want people to view me. I have 6 words written on the wall telling me exactly how I want people to view me. And then you can tell me how I've been doing on this conversation.
Okay. All right.
Hold on. I'm going to grab it. Hold on. Just 1 second.
Oh, you should be able to remember these.
I should, but I just don't dwell on
them. You just want to make sure they're right.
I got you. I do. I like to do things that help better my life, but I also don't want to be one of those people who's like, oh, the only thing I do is concentrate on bettering my life and I have a mantra memorized. And you get what I'm saying?
No, I got you.
Like, I like the benefits of meditation. I hate the world around meditation and like how people talk.
Oh, I hate it. I've been dating a lot of these astrological women lately. I've been meeting them. Oh man, they are just as crazy as some of the regular women that you would think, that the stereotypical crazy women. And then you have the astrological ones that believe in their twin flames and all this stuff. And they're just going to go down that road, even though it hurts them every single day.
Here are my 6 words. Okay. I'm going to tell you, and they are, I want people to think of me as creative, brilliant, funny, genuine, innovative, and kind.
I like those words. I like those words a lot, but where's being real? I mean, that's how you want people to see you, but just you being yourself.
But that is, well, how I want people to, like, when people walk away from me, I'm not trying to have them
impress
say
him.
That guy is real. I'm not trying to impress him. I'm just trying to, like,
oh, see, you flipped it on me. I thought I was asking you a poignant question. You're like, oh, me trying to be real is not me being real.
I would much rather people say that I was kind to them.
And kind is good. We do need more.
Kind is good. And I'm not kind to everybody, but I try to be kind to people as much as I can, because I don't think that being unkind to people has any use. Like there's no real benefit to it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not kind to everybody, because some people do piss me off and then I just, you know, flip the unkind button. But I try. So these are things that I try, and not always things that I succeed at.
All right, Victor. I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you did as well.
I did too. Yeah, I really did.
Now, Victor, before we go, tell people once again how they can check out all your stuff, how they can find you online.
Usually the easiest way to find me is just search for Victor Varnado. You can see me. You can go to Varnado, search for Varnado or Victor Varnado on Twitter or Instagram. I'm pretty easy to find. If you search for Black Albino Comedian, usually you'll find me. But Victor Varnado is the easiest thing. Just go victorvarnado.net. Anything.
So you're like
that.
Me. I had to get a .net because somebody bought up Tuttle.com and I got screwed out of it. And I'm like, I'm not spending all that money on a .com. I'll just go .net.
Right. I had a victorvarnado.com, but then I just wasn't paying attention to it because Yeah, no. It just lapsed, and I just need to reactivate it. So I'm just trying to get them to do the handoff of the server things. So in the meantime,
well, Victor, man, I really, really enjoyed this, man, and
so did I.
I definitely do want to come back and retouch on the Florida cracker thing.
I would absolutely adore it. And by the time that we do, I will have launched my new podcast, and I would love to talk about it.
All right, Victor. I mean, if you don't want to come on mine, I'd be more than happy to come on yours, and we could even talk about it on your podcast if you want to.
We can do both. You should come on my podcast. I have a game show podcast. It's not like my game show podcast is called 6 Unseemly Questions, and it's a game show where I ask you 6 questions, and I ring a bell if I like your answer, and if I don't like your answer, I don't ring the bell, and at the end of the show, I decide whether or not it's worth giving you $5 for your appearance on the show.
Yes. I'm down. Yes, please. Okay. I would love that. Please, I will tell my producer to get a hold of you, and I would love that. I would love that more than anything, to appear on your podcast.
Absolutely. Let's email and figure it out.
All right, Victor. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Thanks. Nice to meet you, and thanks for having me on your show.